on the weekend of July 23rd and 24th, Corinthian Casuals will be hosting the second edition of the Egri Erbstein Tournament. Celebrating one of football's great pioneering coaches, the tournament also brings together like-minded amateur and semi-professional clubs from around the world. After a successful tournament in Budapest in 2019, it's now the turn of Corinthians to host. And in these Broadway to Brazil specials, we're speaking to some of the clubs involved. In this episode, you'll be hearing me having a chat with Richard Timms, a man with the honour of being chairman of the world's first football club, Sheffield FC. Richard chatted to me about the rich history of the club, who are the only team other than Real Madrid to have been bestowed with the FIFA Order of Merit. He spoke about Sheffield's current position in the Northern Premier League Division 1, travels to far-flung places such as India and Brazil, and what he's most looking forward to at the Egri Erbstein tournament. Enjoy! Okay, Rich, thank you so much for joining us on Broadway to Brazil. I'd normally start this by asking for some general background on your club. I mean, the one thing that people know about Sheffield FC is that they are, of course, the world's oldest club. But I wonder if you could maybe expand on that story a little bit. How did they come to be the world's first club, and what's some of their sort of general history since then?
Okay, well, I don't think we've got time to run the 164 years, but we can start off with a very brief condensed history, and I suppose how I got involved and why we've ended up being here, really. So yeah, the club was formed in 1857, although we do have a little bit of evidence that they were around in 1855. Obviously, in those pioneering days of the development of the beautiful game, sometimes the lines get a little bit blurred. When I got involved with Sheffield FC in sort of 1999, I started to I'm a marketing is my background, so to market the club really, and obviously when you put your head above the parapet, people tend to shoot at it. It's not you, it's Notts County, it's Melbourne Cricket Club, it's so and so and so and so. So I had quite a long time of proving the provenance, which I'll come on to later. But no, I mean, one bizarre fact is that the world's first football club, believe it or not, until 2001, didn't have its own ground. It's led a nomadic career for over 140 years, which sounds quite nomadic, which is actually quite frustrating when you're trying to build a business, brand or football club or for whatever. You can't hot desk a football club, really. I got involved as a disillusioned Sheffield Wednesday fan, still a bit disillusioned now. And I was asked to look at, you know, my company going and doing a bit of sponsorship. And Sheffield FC played at Don Valley Stadium then, which was where Jessica Ennis cut her teeth. You know, I went to watch a game in front of one man and a dog and then discovered that, you know, most people from Sheffield knew that we'd got this oldest football club in the world tag, but nothing's actually ever been done with it. And I thought, well, if this is the start of the biggest global game in the world and the Premier League's there with a wash with all the cash, then surely it should be better looked after than it had been so far. So I got involved as a sponsor. I ended up being the chairman, which was never in the agenda, never in the plan.
It never is part of the plan, is it? You know,
not really.
When you get involved with non-league football clubs, it suddenly escalates.
And I still have to pinch myself, not with joy and pleasure, but just wondering how I ended up doing this. But it's a full-time job and I've been in it 23 years. So I moved him to a permanent home and then started to unearth a bit of the history about it. So yes, formed in 1857 by two gentlemen, one from York actually, William Preston, was a wine merchant, so wine and football, that sort of goes, doesn't it? Or beer and football. Another one, Nathaniel Creswick, which was a lawyer. So basically, we're looking for a winter recreation for the gentleman's sport of cricket. Now, what Sheffield FC did, and you're quite right to say that we didn't invent football, because we didn't invent football. Balls have been kicked for thousands of years to various rules and regulations around the world. What Sheffield FC did in 1857 is they came up with a common set of laws by which their other team played. So we formed the first official football club, if you like, in 1857. And the second oldest football club is Hallam FC, which of course are in Sheffield as well. Can you guess what the most often asked question I get thrown at me?
Is it to do with who you played when you were the only football club in existence?
Indeed. If you're the oldest football club in the world, who did you play? But the answer's in our nickname, and our nickname is The Club. So in the rule book that we developed, there's a list of names of members. So it's first letters of the alphabet against second letters of the alphabet, professional men against unprofessional, married against that. For 3 years later, then we must have persuaded another cricket team to form a football club, and the rest, they say, is history. So, you know, along the ways, in those pioneering days in the early 1860s, We didn't have VAR and offside. The game evolved slowly and the laws were amended slowly. So at the very early days, you could actually catch the ball, which was called a fair catch. We had to put it down. You couldn't run with it because that was rugby.
Yep.
But they got rid of the catching game very early on. But Sheffield FC along the way went to invent crossbars, corner kicks, headers, free kicks. The first floodlit game was here. We've got the oldest football ground in the world here. So I started to unearth all this rich history about our city and the development of the game, because the FA like to think football started in London in 1863, which they would. But, you know, if you're a governing body, what came first, the clubs or a governing body? Well, a governing body needs something to govern, so obviously the clubs came first. And, of course, you've got clubs up here and also down in London earlier than the FA. So, you know, Notts County, 1862, Stoke City, 1863, Hallam FC, Cray Wanderers, 1860. So the game was alive and kicking before the FA. And Sheffield FC joined and helped develop the FA, but we played in Sheffield rules and they played in London rules. They're very similar, very, very similar, just developed from a university laws. Our greatest claim to fame really is, you know, as Bobby Charlton said in 2007 when we did 150 years, there's been no boom and bust in Sheffield FC. It's just played football for the love of the game for 150 years, you know, integrity, respect and community. And that's an achievement. And when we talk about provenance, that was recognised by, latterly by the English FA, but also by FIFA in 2004, because we hold a FIFA Order of Merit alongside, do you know the other club that holds a FIFA Order of Merit?
No, I do not.
Well, from a football perspective point of view, you'll like this, because, and from a marketeer's point of view, it's great, because it's Real Madrid.
Oh, yes. No, I think Dominic did actually mention that to me the other day, yeah.
So you've got the biggest, richest and most successful football club in the world that hold this award, and not the biggest and richest. They hold the same award. But the great thing is, same game.
Yeah.
You mess it up how you like, whether it be Corinthian Casuals or Sheffield FC or Real Madrid, it's still the same game. And so we say in terms of, you know, this is just a bit of marketing bump, but, you know, if you are a genuine lover of football, you came from somewhere and everybody likes their ancestors. Or is it all about how much Gareth Bale gets paid? I think you'll find that most football fans don't believe that. So if there are 3 billion football fans that actually directly came from somewhere, and they came from here, the world's first football club. So my audience is a fair size.
Sure, sure. And then after Sheffield were formed, and then the game starts to develop and you get more and more football clubs, professionalisation starts to come into it. In the Corinthian story, there is this split between the Corinthians who held amateurism as the most important thing and the other clubs who are going down a professional route, and then Corinthians refused to join the league system. Where did Sheffield sort of sit on that side of the argument? Were they amateur themselves? Did they have a stance?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, again, we do a lot of media around the world, and people often say, you know, why aren't you very good? You know, why aren't you in the Premier League if you did all this? Well, the reason why Sheffield Wednesday, Sheffield United and all the other teams are better well known is we played football for the love of the game and not for cash. So we remained amateur right through. And, you know, we won the Amateur Cup in 1904 when it was a very difficult trophy to win. England internationals have played for Sheffield FC. We won the first, we're the only team to have won an FA Cup tie on the toss of a coin. But, yeah, I mean, you know, we are what you would call, or the men's first team is what you'd call semi-pro now. You can't compete at a level that we play off these days because the game's evolved. And I often get, say, you know, people say, well, you know, if you win every game from now until kingdom come, we could win the Premier League, and would you be professional? Well, you can't stop evolution, and I won't be chairman forever, so never say never. But until that day comes, we'll park it.
And you mentioned the Amateur Cup win there. I was just going to ask you, sort of, obviously, as you said, we can't go over the 180 years of history, but in terms of sort of highlights over those 180 years, silverware, things like that, is that Amateur Cup sort of the peak?
I think in terms of an actual football trophy, it is. I mean, we've done some pretty amazing things in the last few years as the club and the brand's developed. And we're just trying to arrange a game in Brazil, actually, and then we can move on to that. But, you know, we played in India in 2016. We hold the FIFA Order of Merit, which I suppose is the ultimate proof of provenance. We played against Inter Milan in 2007 to celebrate 150th anniversary, and Mario Balotelli, etc., played.
Oh, wow.
Marco Materazzi. We lost 5-2, but we scored two.
Scored two against Inter Milan. That's pretty good.
Yeah. And Pelle came over and introduced the teams. So,
oh, wow.
That was a pretty memorable occasion, as you can imagine. So, yeah, we've done some pretty strange things because, as I say, people do seem to be interested in where football kicked off, and we're taken in this sort of regard as the upholders of the heritage of the game, I suppose.
And tell us a little bit about the club today, in the modern day. What level are you playing at? The sort of infrastructure of the club, like you mentioned that you're formerly nomadic and now have a home, and sort of what's the supporter base like?
We've come on a lot in recent years. Obviously, the onset of the internet and social media helps. So we've got, you know, about 100,000 on social, which is pretty good for a club of our size. So we'll be playing, we play one division below Corinthians, I think, who are in the Isthmian Premier.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
we'd be one level below, so we're in the Northern Premier Division 1.
Yeah,
so a similar level. We have a women's first team that actually achieved Super League status a few years ago. So we've got women, disability football, all the kids, walking football. So we do everything that, you know, a football club should be doing in its community and education projects. We've got a membership scheme with 5,000 members, 5,000 plus members. But the interesting thing is they're from 53 different countries. And they probably don't support Sheffield FC, but they just love the fact that we're the world's first football club. So, and on that basis, we do ship merchandise around the world in, you know, reasonably small numbers, but they go to Australia, New Zealand, and all over. So, you know, we've got the infrastructures there, and we've got some grand plans just coming into play now about relocating to a new facility that we want to build, and we'd love to invite Corinthians to play there, that's back in the city because we play just outside the city, and build this brand of being the world's first football club and a visitor centre where every football fan in the world could come and see where football kicked off. So, if you like, the Wimbledon of tennis or the Lords of cricket is why can't Sheffield FC be the home of football?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, makes complete sense. And, you know, obviously you're coming down to play in this tournament against the Corinthian Casuals, another grand old name of English football. I mean, being a student of football history yourself, you must have had an awareness of the Corinthian story before this tournament came about.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I think it's a great link, and I think they are using that really well, because they seem to be well embraced in Brazil. And, you know, we have a project called the Pioneers, which is where we are actually bringing the oldest football club from each country together in one organisation. Now, unfortunately, Corinthians don't fit that model because they're not the oldest football club. But it's a similar sort of thing because, you know, Corinthians were pioneering in South America, the same as Le Havre in France. You know, where did football start? Well, usually started in mining, shipping and railways in the Victorian era. So obviously Le Havre being a port city. So those pioneers are really important. And there's some great stories to be had from those clubs, which are very often untold about, you know, how important your football club is for the development of X, Y and Z.
Yeah, absolutely. And then when you were first approached about the Egri Ebstein tournament, I mean, why did the opportunity to compete in that tournament appeal to you and Sheffield FC?
Oh, when it was Corinthians Casuals, I mean, we up until COVID, we usually do a tour somewhere in the world. But I think, you know, probably next year we'll go back to being an international thing. But it was just a yes straight away from us because, you know, to play a historic club like Corinthians Casuals, yeah, it was a no-brainer.
Yeah, I mean, is there something about the sort of the values of the tournament, which sort of does celebrate amateurism and, yeah, that side of football?
Yeah, so yeah, looking at the history of the tournament and, you know, why it was founded, it's absolutely bang on the money for us. It's really good. And the fact that it has an international feel as well. You know, a weekend in London for us northerners, why not? We used to do it in the 1860s.
And tell us a little bit about your touring experience. I mean, you said you're looking into going to Brazil. You've been to India, you say. How did these things come about?
Some of them are quite random, believe it or not. I mean, we've got good relationships in Germany. We've got a decent fan base in Germany. So Germany, Poland, etc., we've played in a number of times. But the club has had a touring history. Corinthians went to Brazil, but, you know, there was a team that went to the States in 1904 called the Pilgrims. They were led by Sheffield FC and Sheffield FC captain. So the first international team to play in the US was led by Sheffield FC. You know, we've got bits and bobs of history in Eindhoven and all over the place of these tours. So, you know, I suppose it by chance, really. We were invited in our 150th year, 2007, to play in the Hong Kong Sevens, all expenses paid, etc. So you're not going to turn that down. You know, a group of painters and decorators and teachers that play football, do you want to go and play in Hong Kong? And the same with India, really. We do get a lot of inquiries that come through just because of, obviously, the internet and who we are. And you do have to actually weed them out because a lot of them don't come to anything. People want us to go, but you know, we have to pay for our own travel. So it's, you know, it's just not possible. But the Brazil one came. We did a tweet last season, just said, who's your Sheffield FC play pre-season? And all the normal one came, comes in. Borussia Dortmund, Real Madrid, Sheffield Wednesday. And a team called Ibis in Brazil hooked onto it. Now, I don't know, in your Brazilian history, you've heard of a club called Ibis. But they're not a top-flight side, but they are big. They play right in the north of the country. And they're known as the worst football team in the world. So one of their supporters put on the Twitter vote. They managed to get 66,000 votes together. And that was picked up by DAZN Sports and Football Co., in Brazil, and said, look, do you want to make this a reality? So we've signed some pre-contracts and we're just waiting to hear. So the world's first versus the world's worst. I don't think they are the world's worst. I think they just had a bad spell. But the Brazilian general football public, it's a bit of a second team thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So it worked quite well. And, you know, why not? Who wouldn't want to go and play in Brazil?
Yeah. Maybe there should be a mini tournament between the first, the worst, the last, and the best. Tell us a little bit more about this nomadic history that you mentioned. Is there a reason why Sheffield never had a ground, and when did the ground finally come about? I ask that because it's actually a similar story for Corinthians. It was 1988 is when we finally moved into our home in Tolworth after 100 plus years of nomadic existence.
Well, yeah, I think in the very early days, you know, they used to play up in a field, turn up, have a game of football and go home. I don't think there's any need to put any roots down. But Bramall Lane was just around the corner from where Sheffield FC were formed and was already a sports ground. It wasn't a football ground, but it used to host athletics and dog racing and cricket. Yorkshire Cricket were based there at one time. And we played a match there against Hallam in 1862. But I don't think the gentlemen of the cricket club of Sheffield United wanted the ruffians of football playing there. So we moved on and we played at the Hillsborough Dog Track, Speedway Stadium, Abbeydale Park, which is another Yorkshire cricket ground, was a venue for about 70 years. But of course, as the rules and regulations moved on in football, things like floodlights were required, your changing rooms needs to be so far, you've got to have this capacity. I always say, you know, from an insurance terms, it's not how many people you can get in your ground, it's how many people you can get out without killing them that meets your insurance requirements. So I don't think they really thought about it that much, if I'm honest. And then when they stayed at Abbeydale for 70 years, I thought, again, the committee thought they'd probably be there forever, but it wasn't to be the case. And of course, it's very difficult to grow a football club if you've not put any roots down. The first and foremost thing is we need a ground, lads. And we achieved that in 2001. And to be honest, it's just outside the city, but it's a great little football ground. It's got its own real ale pub, holds about 2,000, very pretty. And it's a great place to play football, but we've got bigger ambitions in terms of developing our brand. From a training perspective and from a community perspective, we still play all over the city. We've only got one pitch currently. And we want to build this home of football, which again will be, as I said, an international visitor centre.
And you mentioned that you're a disillusioned, was it Sheffield Wednesday fan, right?
Yes.
Do you have a relationship with the two big Sheffield clubs? Do you play each other in pre-season or any of that stuff?
Well, we used to on a regular basis when they were more locally owned, I would say. So, you know, Sheffield United are Saudi-owned and Sheffield Wednesday are Thai-owned now. Relationship from a club point of view has dwindled, should I say, as the game's developed. In my own personal relationship, I'm born and bred a Sheffield Wednesday fan. I'm not even a Sheffield FC fan. I'm a Sheffield Wednesday fan in terms of football supporter. And that will never change because you can't change your birthright. Mm-hmm. And my job from a marketeer was to look after the asset from the city, really. That, you know, we've got the world's first football club, and that's how I got involved, not to try and own a football club or to be even chairman or anything like that. So, yeah, I mean, there is a disillusionment with football. When we market, etc., what we say is we don't object to top-end football because I think, you know, the product's probably better than it ever has been to watch, whether you agree with the money or not. But as Margaret Thatcher said, the market's the market, and the market's driven by demand. Now, is that sustainable? Don't know, not really for me to say. All I'm saying and what we're saying is it's not just about you. There is more of an offer. I mean, my son lives in Nunhead and he goes to watch Dulwich.
Yep.
says it's a great thing. It's not dissimilar to Sheffield FC. It's probably, you know, more fans, and but there are all these hipsters who go for the real ale, etc., etc. So there's an experience to be had there as well. Because I think what you find is certainly probably away from the top end of the Premier League, but sometimes the experience is not what it should be in terms of the pricing, the quality of what you get in. You know, you go to Wembley for a match and a hamburger costs you, what, 18 quid or something. You just think, wow, you're ripping me off. And we don't get that. Our season tickets average at £7.50 a game. So, and we're at the top price end because we've got the real L pub and stuff like that. But it's still £7.50. And if you're a junior, I think you're in for a fiver. You can have a pint, watch a game of football, and as an OAP, you're back home for less than a tenner.
Yeah, so looking forward to what Sheffield FC are going to bring to the tournament. What can we expect? What kind of form are you on going into this? How was your last season?
Horrendous.
Okay, and what kind of style of football can we be expecting?
Well, we've got a new setup now. We struggled for the first time in a long time last year from various things. We've been looking to change things around. We've got some new investors come on board. We were rather hamstrung last year, but I'll not bore you with the details. But yeah, we managed to escape relegation on the last day, and we have reshaped the team and look better. I can't tell you, I've not seen him play yet, but so we've just signed Harry Maguire's brother, actually.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so young Joey's dad played for us, so that'll be an interesting one, and obviously a little bit of a celeb. So yeah, we'll be all right. We're generally all right. I mean, it's difficult to gauge. Especially against your international sides. It's, you know, what level are they? You just don't know. We'll not be dissimilar to Corinthians.
Yeah.
But the other two, no idea.
From your personal perspective, what are you most looking forward to about the tournament?
Winning it, of course.
Good man. You've ended the interview on a confident note. So yeah, we look forward to welcoming you down here in London.
Yeah, it'd be a pleasure to meet you. So yeah, thanks for the invite. Thanks for the podcast, and good luck to everybody, really.
Absolutely. Cheers now.
All right. Cheers. Bye-bye.
So thank you once more to Richard, whose Sheffield FC will be taking on the Hungarian side Bock in the Egri Erbstein semi-finals. Once again, the tournament takes place on the weekend of July 23rd and 24th. Weekend passes are available at a bargain £15, which gets you into four matches over the 2 days. To book your place and learn more about the tournament, head to egrierbstein.org. This episode of Broadway to Brazil was produced, edited and mixed by me, Yarek Zaba. Dominic Bliss is series co-producer, and our title music is by John Forrest. For more on the podcast, head to broadwaytobrazil.com.